Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide-leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Herndon thing. Chris Herndon joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is a 16 Blue by The Replacements, in honor of the Grizzlies' 16th pick and the chance, the always chance that's always there for disappointment on draft night.
Yeah. So you've said before, and your piece went up yesterday, I urge people to read it, that the single most likely thing for them to do is to make the pick, because that's always, they have it.
That's an object that would have to be set in motion for anything else to happen. Right.
Don't you think pretty close to that is trading back?
No, I actually don't.
No.
Because I think, I mean, that's a scenario everyone has introduced and entertained, myself included,
yes,
for good reason. Because we know that if they're going to do the renegotiating extend with Jaren Jackson, they have to clear some salary. It would be better for the team to clear that salary on draft night, because even let me back up a little bit. I have no idea whether they're going to get this done with Jaren or not. I don't know if they know if they're going to get this done with Jaren tonight. But if they do know they're going to get it done with Jaren, you don't want to put that out there publicly until you've done something to clear the space to do it. You don't want to sort of, you know, your order of operations, not only in terms of processing, but in terms of PR, probably has to be aligned, right? So it would, if they're going to get the deal done with Jaren, they don't have to clear salary tonight, but it would be helpful to do it tonight. And so everyone sees that, and the easiest way to do that is moving Conchar, and the easiest way to move Conchar is to trade back with Brooklyn, who has all these picks, all this cap space, blah, blah, blah. They have all kinds of potential paths to clear this space, now or next week.
Among them, what else? They could give up a future one.
They could clear the cap space without giving up. Now, any way to do it, you're going to give up something.
Yeah,
but that something doesn't necessarily have to be draft picks. You could wave and stretch Conchar and clear $4 million of the $6 million just like that without giving up a single thing.
Right.
You could decline the team option on year two of Cole Anthony's $13.1 million. Make that a 1 year deal. You could wave and stretch Cole Anthony, take that $13 million, spread it over 3 years, and you're done.
Right.
Now, the only thing you lose there is you don't have the Cole Anthony contract as the trade chip. You've given up no draft picks.
Right.
So, to me, I'm not given – there's a hard limit on the level of draft asset I'm giving up to get off the $6 million of John Conchar money. And I'm not going 16 to 17 just to do that. 16 to 27.
27, yeah.
You give me 26 and 27? Like, okay, maybe. But, like, I'm not going back 11 picks in the first round of this draft to clear $6 million. I wouldn't do it if I'm the Grizzlies.
One of the things that I said about it was, because it's emotionally unsatisfying to move from 16 to 27 or 26 to whatever. But one of the things I said, the thing I would like best about it would be that it would be an indication, and maybe it isn't, that Jaron wants to do this. In other words, I know they're not supposed to be talking about
this. This is the thing.
Don't you think it's clear if they do it so that they know that he's willing to do this?
I wrote a draft, you know, I did the draft preview, went up yesterday. I wrote a draft day notebook this morning, which will go up pretty soon. And it's something I can set up so I can update it throughout the day if there are other trades or rumors mm-hmm. or whatever. And what I led with in that was like a 2 or 3 paragraph thing, or the first item after the little intro was basically called like watch the money or something like
right.
that. And it is, there's, you know, the number 16 pick is where sort of the focus is, but the real story may be the indicators of what's going to come in the future. And keep an eye out tonight for, do the Grizzlies shed salary on draft night? If they shed salary on draft night, that is not a confirmation they have a deal with Jaron, but it is an indication they think they have a deal with Jaron, right?
That's my point, yes.
And if they don't shed any salary tonight, that doesn't confirm they don't have a deal with Jaron, because, again, you can shed salary in other right. ways later, but it would raise an eyebrow about it. So I think that's actually maybe the lead story of draft night is, what indicator do you get about which way the Jaron thing right. is going?
Yeah. So that's how I have consoled myself, is that right. if they make that deal to move back, it's like, oh, that means yeah. they know.
I'm just saying, and this is me talking. Like, if Zach Lyman is listening, this is public advice. Do not move back 11 spots in the first round to clear $6 million in cap space. Like, you got to give me the 26 and the 27, right. or maybe you give me, I move up in the second round from 48 to 36. Even then, I don't know if I do it. Because, again, you can find other ways.
Okay.
You can find other ways.
The other thing is that I, unlike it feels like the great masses of Grizzlies fans out there, I don't care as much about positional fit.
Right.
And I certainly don't care if they stay put as opposed to training to get a real live veteran player, or if they move up in right. terms of getting a real live veteran player. And obviously this is a stupid thing to say, but I'd rather have Sengun than Zaire Williams, right? Like yep. you always want the good. And
it's a cliche, but it's rooted in truth. The draft is about talent acquisition.
And there's such a high miss rate.
Yep.
Now there's a miss rate even for guys that they believe in, right? Like they like even
oh, sure.
for guys they believe in, there's a miss rate. But these people are not equal. Nick Clifford and Thomas Sorber are not the same player. One is going to be better than the other.
Right. No. I agree. And there's enough positional flexibility. I do think that sometimes you bump up against limits to that, because not all players develop the same way. Players develop differently based on what team they're at and the opportunities right. they get and the structure. And you do have to think about that kind of stuff. You could have one player who you think is 5% better than the other player, but if the player who is 5% worse in your eyes has a better path to development on your team, they may end up being a better player.
Right. I see.
And so you get yeah. that kind of stuff going on. Like, I think if you're committed to Ja Morant, and I think they love what they've seen from Scottie Pippen, they have this cheap contract, I think a small guard has a harder path to development
Jace
with the Grizzlies.
Jace Richardson would be a perfect example, right?
I think he looks really good, but he's 6 feet tall, and I think that's a hard guy to develop with the Grizzlies if you're committed to Ja Morant and Scottie Pippen. So that's somewhere where, if I think Jace Richardson is 10% better than Thomas Sorber, I don't. But if I thought that way, or Thomas Sorber is not a good example, let's say Liam McNeely.
Right, right.
If I thought Jace Richardson was 10% better than Liam McNeely, it's close, but I think Richardson's a little bit more talented. If I'm the Grizzlies, I'd probably go ahead and take McNeely, because there's a clear path for him, whereas I think it would be hard for someone like Richardson. So I do think that team context comes into play at the margins, but it has to be close enough for that to matter.
So it feels like Cedric Coward is everyone's hot
yeah,
rising
and that worries me, because he's mine too. But like, what if he's just not good? He could be Zaire.
I know. Well, Jeffrey and I have hit upon this issue, that if he really is what you hope he is, or
he'll be playing
he
for the Spurs or Thunder next
yes,
year.
In other words, he will. And if he right. so if he gets to the Grizzlies, he's not that
right. Right.
Like,
right.
I mean,
right.
Yeah. He's a fraud. He's an internet fraud. So by definition, if he's there, he can't be that good. Because if he's that good, he's not going to get there.
Yeah, there may be something to that.
I think that's what I believe.
Yeah.
I think that's what I believe. Let me go over.
He's a good name too. Sometimes I wonder. Sometimes with the draft stuff, I think the right. name, like OJ Mayo, had a great name.
Yeah, he had a great name. Let me go through some of the guys who could at least either could conceivably be there, or conceivably you could trade up to imagine getting. And one is someone who we haven't mentioned, Noah Esenge.
Yeah.
He's the guy. He's not playing in his. I don't know what happened there. Did he win last night, Jeffrey? Did they win last night?
So they were in the Bundesliga final, which is the German league.
And he's
right,
skipping
finals.
It to come to
yeah,
the draft.
So I don't know enough about this to pass judgment. I have detected that people in America, from an American basketball perspective, I think, or rightly, because I have the same instinct, going, what are you doing? Why are you here? You're not coming here to play the NBA Finals. You're coming here to, like, walk across the stage. Why are you with your team? Like, I understand that impulse. I also share that impulse. But there are people who know more about international basketball who are like, oh, no, it's no big deal. The team wants him to come. So right. I don't know about that. I do know that he is your classic international ball of clay.
He's schizophrenia.
There are at least one of these in every grade. The dichotomy I came up with was, every once in a while, this guy is Giannis Antetokounmpo. Uh-huh. Most of the time, this guy is Bruno Caboclo. right? And so, he's that. And I couldn't begin to tell you which.
Would you hate it?
I would. I'm not enthusiastic about it, just because there's so little there for me to discern based on what I know. And while I do think it's a talent swing, I do worry about the floor on some of this stuff. You know,
feels a little bit like a French Zaire Williams, a little bit too. Like, I mean, he's another ball of clay.
We've turned Zaire to the boogeyman for all these guys.
No, but he's a ball of clay. He might as well be European for as much of a ball of clay as he was. He's also a guy who you see all over the place in the draft. Like, you see him at 9 and you see him at 24.
Eight to 20 something. Yeah.
So that's why. Okay. Carter Bryant is, again, the one that everyone assumed at this point is not going to be there because he's too much the classic everything you want.
It's the archetype of the.
He's either going to go 10 or 11. Does it bother you at all, though, that he, like, didn't play much? You know, like, I did see someone make the point that he was benefited. His reputation was benefited by the fact that he didn't play much.
You know, he was a freshman at Arizona. The not playing a lot, having a low scoring average or whatever, doesn't bother me that much. It's more when you really drill in on, like, he's the 3-and-D archetype, but it feels like a lot of guys who become that in the NBA were sort of better than that in college. Like, Tony Allen led the big whatever in scoring, right? Yep. And then became a defensive specialist. So it does feel like at the college level, if you're like a high-level NBA athlete, you should probably just produce more, even if that's not going to be your role in the NBA.
Right. It's like you should be good in summer league. You know, be good in summer league.
So there is some of that, right?
The South Carolina kid, we talked about him a little bit yesterday. Colin Murray-Boyles, again, doesn't feel like – but there's one. The fit doesn't seem perfect at all, right? He's a non-shooting
big. There is no
big.
Perfect fit for him anywhere because he's an odd kind of player. Yeah,
that's true.
And so the bet on him is just that he just impacts things in so many unique ways that, like he helps your team and you know, that he makes his own fit with his talent would be the idea.
There are a couple of big point guards, the guy from Illinois and the guy from BYU.
Right. Big guys, fancy passers. Yeah. I tend to like those kind of players, but I tend to like them when they're plus defenders, and it doesn't seem like either of those guys are.
Yeah, I think that's right. I
confirm. I think BYU played it. No defense.
Yeah. So I like the Illinois guy better than the BYU guy from what I've seen.
In terms of bigs, and we mentioned this yesterday, and we just had John on. John was singing the praises of Thomas Sorber, too. Like, he was, as a freshman, was a terrific
super
player.
Super productive, and not just a, like, a, you know, buckets and boards like kind of thing. I mean, his passing numbers, his steal numbers, he's this, like, sort of slow, sensibly slow guy who had great steal numbers, which suggests his hands, his awareness, his processing. I'm a sucker for any big that gets an Al Horford comp. I am certified to like to want that guy, and so I think he's really interesting. He is not positionally the ideal, you know, fit for the Grizzlies if you're committed to Zach Edey long term.
This is true, though, isn't it? That if the Grizzlies pick a player tonight who's in the starting lineup game one, it's most likely to be a center.
I don't think that's true.
Isn't it KCP and Jalen Wells? Right. I mean, those are your starters on the wing.
I think I think. I don't think they're going to pick a player tonight who's going to be in the starting lineup.
I don't either.
First of all.
Right.
But I think there's this – I just don't think there are any centers on the board at 16 who you're going to start. Thomas Sorber's not going to be in a starting lineup on opening night. They'll start Brandon Clark or they'll do whatever. Right. Like, I just don't think they're going to do that. Whereas I think, you know, if you trade it up or whatever, if you got Carter Bryant or Colin Murray-Boyles, if you got Colin Murray-Boyles, you could start Jaren, quote unquote, at the five and him at the four, and you could start that on opening night.
That's true.
I could see that. More
a guy that I'm not at all.
Neat Clifford, like if he is a great training camp or whatever, you know?
Hard for me to get excited about Asa Newell, but he's a guy the Grizzlies supposedly worked out.
Yeah, they worked him out. He's a guy I sort of dismissed at when I did my first blush of all these guys to decide who I wanted to look at more. He was one of the guys I sort of set aside on first blush. because I looked at him and I said, skinny big in the middle of the first round, skinny freshman big middle of the first round, like, you know, you want to draft Noah Clowney. Like, there's guys right. like this in every draft and they just disappear after 3 years.
Right.
He looks like that, and he might be that. But when I came back around at the end and took a closer look at him, there's some interesting stuff there. Like, I like bigs who can play above the rim for the Grizzlies. I think the Grizzlies need more athletes. John Morant can throw lobs to. The numbers aren't as much like this. But listen, I can't remember whether some podcast, something I was reading from a quote-unquote draft analyst who knows more than I do, suggested he could be a really good rebounder at the NBA level. And so, like, rebounder or lob threat, that is the kind of player I think makes sense for the Grizzlies. But no, I'm not excited about that.
Liam McNeely?
He's a guy who was not good as a freshman at UConn relative to expectation. Apparently, you know, he had a foot injury in the middle of the year. There's other, like, environmental things with the team. The people who, like, pay attention to, like, EYBL and AAU and all, which I pay zero attention right. to, like, think he's way better than he showed his freshman year. And so, like, he's a 6'8 guy who people, even though the numbers weren't good in college, people think he's going to be a really good shooter. But questions about athleticism. He sort of sounds like Jake LaRavia, but a real shooter, not a theoretical shooter, which would be a decent player, but I'm not excited about that either.
If they do trade back, well, Nate Clifford could be there, like, if they trade back, yeah. conceivably.
Right.
There's also more centers who could be there. Ryan Kalkbrenner from Creighton.
Yeah, I would not want to come out of this draft with a 24-year-old center you took in the late first round. That would be a disappointing outcome.
Okay. But there, right now in the ESPN mock draft, at 30, going to the LA Clippers, a favorite of yours. So he would, according to this mock draft, he would be available at 27.
About Noah Penda?
Noah Penda. Yeah. Why did you put him on your list?
This is not the Jaren Jackson Jr. draft where I spent four
pounding
months watching
right,
games
right, right.
and
I
like,
know.
Like
We're
I,
all limited.
Yeah. And so I like the kind of player he is, which is a 6'8 forward who's a plus defender, processes the game, you know, plays in transition. Like, that kind of player I think has enormous utility. And I think that's a kind of player the Grizzlies need. The book on him, the people who doubt him worry about
the shooting
and the foot speed, right? I like the fact that he has been productive in professional basketball overseas. He's not a guy who's, like, at the end of the bench. He's not Darko, who, like, he's a workout wonder. Like, he's playing right. competitive games, and he's good in competitive
games.
The shooting's,
like, really bad, though, is the problem.
And yeah. I like that some of the smart people who do spend a lot of time on this, like Sam Vecenie, like John Hollinger, people who know more than me, who I trust, all like this guy. I'll have him higher on their boards than he is in the mock drafts. And so I like that aspect of it.
Yeah, I know in your column you threw out some names in the second. And on the podcast that you did with Drew, you threw
I just for
the
record, the last year the Grizzlies uh-huh. had two picks. They weren't as late. It's harder the later you get. Grizzlies had two picks in the mid to late second round.
Uh-huh.
I wrote a column before the draft. I named five players,
uh-huh.
and I hit both of them. Of the five players I mentioned,
wow.
Jalen Wells and Cam Spencer were two of the five. So when they draft Brooke Barnheiser
from Northwestern
at 56, the new Jitty, you heard it here
Why
first.
Why is he the new Jitty?
He's a white wing from the
he
Midwest.
Was hurt too, I think
he was hurt some last yeah. year. Yeah, he was a white wing from the Midwest who's like rate stats on like steals and rebounds and stuff like that is like super high.
I see.
And so new Jitty, come incoming.
What? Just do you have a sense of what strategically they might be doing with their 2 second round picks?
I think if they keep and take players with those picks, either they're going to be two ways or stashes. That's what either it's going to be Cam Spencer or it's going to be Tariq Bibarovich.
Right,
that's what
right,
they're doing. Like these
right.
guys are not. These guys are not. Let me rephrase. The plan will not be for those players to be on the main roster. Now, if you take a guy at 48 and you get into summer league and he's the MVP of the summer league, you're like,
right.
wow. That player
and
may
Zach
be on the main roster.
Going to be saying we didn't expect him to.
Yeah. So that could happen, but that won't be the plan on draft night. The plan will be two ways or stashes.
What, by the way, do you think is the plan for Cam Spencer? Speaking of for this coming,
I year? Think they would like, for better or worse, and I'm not really sure which it is. I think they would like to put Cam Spencer on the main roster. I think a thing to look at with, I don't think I've written this anywhere. Everything's so complicated. This is the most complicated offseason they've ever had. Even if it ends up being very, they don't right. much. The possibilities are so sprawling. A small thing to keep an eye on is they have this room exception for $8.8 million. They could spend all of that on a player. They could give it all to Clint Capella or whatever. I think they're going to try to save about $2 million of that for Cam Spencer because you can give him, you can give him a minimum contract without using that exception. You can use what's called literally a minimum contract exception or whatever, but that can only be for 2 years. If they want to give him the contract they like to give all these guys, which is a four-year deal with team options in year three and four, to give a player that kind of deal, you have to use one of these exceptions to do that. That's what they've done with Scottie Pippen, with G.G. Jackson, with Vince Williams, like all these guys. So I think they're going to try to save a little bit of that room exception at the end of the summer to give Cam Spencer like a four-year cheap deal that has team control on the back end of it. If they can't do that and they feel like they need to use the whole room exception, like to sign somebody else, then it may be just a 2-year deal for him. But I think they want to move him onto the main roster.
Anything else particularly intrigue you broadly about the draft beyond the Grizzlies? Where Ace Bailey goes, how many of the five first rounders the Nets will use?
I think it's been interesting, and this is something that I wrote about in the notebook that'll go up today. The Grizzlies opened the dam on the trades with the Desmond Bane thing.
Right.
There's been tons of trades since then, and I think every trade that's happened since then. Now, you could really, you know.
Are they related?
Well, you could really go broad and say, not related to the Bane deal, but what I was going to say was you could really go broad and just say, like, butterfly effect or whatever. Every move ripples everywhere else.
Right.
And you could overstate that. But I actually do think every one of the trades that's happened has some indirect ripple effects on the Grizzlies, potential Grizzlies offseason. And so.
Well, you mentioned Clint Capella. So one of the things that happened there is that.
Two of the centers I mentioned in my free agency thing about centers they could try to sign with that room exception were Luke Kornet from Boston and Clint Capella from Atlanta. And then yesterday, Boston traded a center, Kristaps Porzingis, to Atlanta, right?
Right.
So I think that trade, A, makes Clint Capella more likely to sign and go somewhere else. He won't be back in Atlanta. But it probably makes it more likely that Luke Kornet does stay in Boston, right? So that move impacts the center market and free agency.
And what do you think of Clint Capella?
I liked him earlier in his career. He is not what he once was. He's not as quick off the floor as he once was. But for $8 million to like start for a month and then be a backup center, I think that'd be totally fine.
Totally fine. What did you overall, take that deal. What did you, that three-way deal, Hawks, Celtics, Brooklyn, what did you make of it?
I like what Atlanta is doing. The East, you know, with all these injuries, is more wide open. I'm not a believer in Trae Young, but if you're going to do something with Trae Young, they've got the right plan. You're putting big defensive players all around him. You've got Kristaps Porzingis, a 7'3", you know, block out the sun, you know, rim protector. You got this athletic power forward who's good defensively in Jalen Johnson. You got two big wings who are good defensively in Dyson Daniels and Zachary Richichet. And, you know, Porzingis can pick and pop with Trae Young. So if Trae Young is going to work, this team construction in this Eastern Conference next season, this is the year that you do something
plus
with Trae Young.
Plus, they don't have the access to their own pick, so they might as well. They have a pick. They're missing a pick and then a pick swap, I think, both. So,
but they still have the 13th in this draft.
Yes, but I mean, going forward, they might as well be good next
year. I think they're going to re-sign Caris LeVert, whatever. This is the year they're going to go all in next year to try to make a run in the East, and then we'll see from there because Porzingis only has 1 year on the deal. Right. Boston is like cleared out $2 million in tax payments like in 2 days or whatever. And I got to think that there's still people talking about potential Derek White, Jaylen Brown trades, but I got to think this makes it less likely that they trade those guys. There's less of a need to trade those guys now.
Right. It's kind of amazing you walk away from Jrue Holiday and Kristaps Porzingis and get a gunner in seconds. But the truth of the matter is they did very well. They didn't have to give up assets to get rid of those contracts. They got things.
Jrue Holiday is 35 years old. I'm making this up. It's something like that. 35 years old. And has 3 years of more than $100 million left on his deal, and they got paid to move that
deal. This is one of the things that, like, Jrue Holiday's evidently unhappy. With all due respect, I don't care.
He's
like,
reached the point in his career
where
he's worth whatever.
Like, most people in America, if they are making dramatically more than they are worth, they are fired. They don't get to
make
the same amount of money that they
you don't
know,
get to go. You don't get to go be rich in Portland. I'd love to go be rich in Portland. Sign me up.
Make me be rich in Portland.
Yeah,
that would be. That would be the best thing ever. And then the C.J. McCollum for Jordan Poole.
Yeah.
So anyway.
I like that for Washington.
Okay, but that's a problem because the Grizzlies have this pick swap where they have the worst of the Wizards or the Suns pick next year, right? Does this elevate the Wizards?
No, it makes the Wizards work. No, the Wizards are trying to clear out. This is a long-term move for the Wizards. They're trying to just clear out contracts. The Wizards are going to be bad next year. They're going to be bad next year before this trade, after this trade. The Wizards are going to be bad. And so,
just as bad. No.
The only thing that the Wizards part of more than likely, the only thing that the Wizards component of that swap means is the Grizzlies are not going to get the number one pick in the draft. And so, because the Wizards and the Suns are both going to be bad.
Right.
And so if the Suns, like, and the Wizards are going to be in the bottom eight, so their pick will be in play, I think. So if the Suns get lucky, quote-unquote lucky in the lottery and jump up for the number one pick, the Wizards are going to get the number one pick with the swap, and then the Grizzlies will get the Wizards pick, which will, guess what, will be like seventh in the draft right. or whatever. So I think the Grizzlies are going to get a great pick out of that. The Wizards thing is only like cuts out the number one pick as a possibility.
And now they have they got McCollum and Marcus Smart there to help the kids. Well, what's the point of it from the
they have finally committed to rebuilding. They're doing the opposite of the Pelicans. They're not pretending like they're going to win with Jordan Poole.
They once did. Yeah. He's sort of the example of this.
They are stacking young players with first round picks. So I had another one tonight, two tonight. And then they will have all those young players, and they will go into next summer, 2026, with $100 million in cap space and a roster full of young players.
Kyrie re-signs in Dallas. I guess that wasn't a surprise. 3 years at 119.
No. Again, I wonder about, you know, the long term of that. But
right. All right, Chris. Appreciate it. You can read Chris's stuff over at the Daily Memphian. Are you setting it up
I'm calling it a notebook. I'll set notebook. It up in the middle of the day, and with the idea of if anything happens that's notable, I can update it between now and the start of the draft. If nothing happens, I won't update it. It'll just be there, but
all right.
It'll be there.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it. We got Sam Hardiman coming up next. It is that time again, ladies and gentlemen. The semi-annual sale is underway at Oak Hall. Still early in the summer, still blazing hot. And yet you can wander over there and get the best savings of the season. Men's merchandise, women's merchandise, tailored clothing, sports clothing. It is, you walk in there and you will see it is a tremendous sale. I look forward to it every year. Now is the moment because you can get in there and outfit yourself with a summer sale, even though most of summer is still ahead of us. Same incredibly helpful people, same beautiful clothes, but bigger savings than ever. It is the semi-annual sale. It is that time again at Oak Hall. Back in a moment is Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
DSW's semi-annual sale is back. Take 40% off all clearance shoes in stores for a limited time. Literally every single clearance item at your DSW store is on sale right now. Sneakers, sandals, any style. If they're on the clearance racks, they're 40% off. So what are you waiting for? Don't sleep on these savings. Get to DSW ASAP. It's all or nothing, people. Shop the DSW semi-annual sale today.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by Sam Hardiman. Sam Hardiman, of course, covers the city for the Daily Memphian. Sam, how do you feel about playing golf in this heat?
I have to bring a towel, like an extra towel. Mm-hmm. And so I have to like wipe the sweat off myself constantly. And then I have to reapply the sunscreen and like the cycle repeats.
But you're not deterred.
But the same. No, but I'm an addict, Jeff, and so that nothing deters the addict.
Well, I just wondered because I know on the one hand you're a Yankee, so I wouldn't think you'd be well suited. On the other hand, you're a golf addict, so I wondered how these things balanced out. Also, by the way, we've got all kinds of drafts coming up. We've got the NHL draft, and I know your Bruins have a high pick in this NHL draft. But then the Celtics have become disassembled. How do you feel about that?
I was like, in the elevator last night when the Porzingis trade went through, like in the elevator of my apartment building. And I just thought to myself, I am not excited about George's Niang. Like, that's what, like, the thought that went through my head. And, like, you know, we were texting with, like, in the group chat this morning, you know, with the New England guys. And we were sort of, like, looking at it and we're like, is this the worst all four Boston sports teams have been in our lifetimes? And, like, one of my buddies replied back that, you know, 2000 has a case, right, before that first Patriots Super Bowl. But this is, yeah, this is pretty bad in terms of just, like, the Celtics, because of the luxury tax, have to, you know, break up a great team. The Bruins are, you know, hopefully drafting a franchise center.
Yeah, but they're bad. The Bruins are not formally bad. Yeah, right.
They're formally bad. Like, everyone's picking the Patriots to do really well this year. But, I mean, I'm sorry. I'm not, like, I'm buying it yet. When you still really don't have an offensive line, like, you're still going to be, you know, hoping Drake May doesn't get harmed. Right, but it's interesting.
And then the Red Sox are mediocre and just traded away, you know, their supposed star. They got a bunch of kids.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. They have a bunch of exciting kids. Right. 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 So yeah, it's definitely interesting. And yeah, I mean, the Yankee in me is not enjoying this heat at all. I'm after 7 years here, I'm still not fully. And I spent 3 years before that in Oklahoma, which is also very hot. And right. It's still very hot for me.
All right. You wrote the story, when we found out, Saturday, I guess it was Saturday now, that Fred,
it was
Smith,
Saturday night.
That Fred Smith had died. Obviously a tough day for the city, stunning, and amazing that it was stunning, because it shouldn't necessarily be stunning that an 80-year-old man dies, but I think people sort of thought he was going to be immortal. So it was, you know, it was certainly news that rocked the city. And I think your story was the first story out about it. Did you have any occasion during your years here to spend time with Fred Smith?
Yeah. I can't say I ever met Fred Smith. I was in the room a few times when he was in the room.
Yeah.
But I will tell one story, and I think it's relevant from a sports perspective. 2 years ago, when we were in the midst of the who gets the money, the Grizzlies or the Tigers, right, over the stadium. I was working that story, and it came to my attention that Fred Smith was about to make a very large gift to Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium. Okay, and a source told me this. A second source confirmed it. So I had it square, okay? Like, I could have, and this is October 2023, we end up breaking the news of the Daily Memphian in, I think, November 21st, 2023. So there was a 30-day period where we had it square and could have gone, and we didn't. And I reached out on, I looked at the emails the other night. This is why I'm telling the story. I had reached out to Fred Smith directly. I had, through a source, gotten his FedEx email address.
Uh-huh.
And had reached out to him and essentially pitched him, hey, when you want to talk about this, I'm not coming to you to confirm it. I'm not trying to be sneaky here, but when you want to talk about it, I'd love to talk to you. I'd love to talk to you about the city in general. You know, I was like, hey, Fred Smith will give me an interview. That's what I'm pitching here. And he didn't reply. And so we're about to publish the story. You know, we have it all, you know, I'm writing the story on November 20th of 2023. And I reach out to Fred Smith, and it was 7:10 at night. And I reached out to him and I said, as I'm sure you're aware, this news is going to be public tomorrow. I would still love to talk to you. Do you have a few moments? And about 25 minutes later, his son, Richard, gets back to me and says, hey, my dad forwarded me your note and I'd like to talk to you. And so what I didn't notice at the time, and when I looked at on Saturday night, late Saturday night, when I was sort of wrapping up, you know, writing what was, you know, the first story about Fred Smith's passing, was that, you know, Richard Smith, when he had gotten his father's email and replied to me, had actually included his father's response, his father's email to him about wanting to talk about it. And it said, please call me about this, you know, like a 3-4 word sentence. Right. But what was really interesting about this, and I think it said a lot about Fred Smith, is it wasn't, you know, Fred Smith, that was his email moniker within FedEx. It was Captain Smith. And Captain Smith was his rank that he rose to in the Marine Corps. And I just thought it was super interesting that all those years later, you know, 50 plus years later, essentially, that was what he called himself, was Captain Smith.
Interesting.
And I just thought that was a really interesting, you know, email.
And in the story that you wrote, I think this was in the story you wrote, and you had some lovely paragraphs in there about just the impact, honestly, in the built environment, like as you drive around Memphis. But the other thing, I think, didn't you tell the story? You weren't the first ever to tell this story about what his, when he was in the Marines, what his troops did for him once that was particularly meaningful?
Right. Yeah. He gave an interview, I think, last year to the Military Times about his service. And what he told the Military Times, and I pulled this on the other night because I the first thing I thought, you know, when we were writing the story was beyond, you know, FedEx. I'm like, this guy's actual war hero, like a genuine war hero. And like, you know, that was so long ago, people forgot. But, you know, he said to the Military Times that essentially, you know, every day he would have some stuff to do at headquarters, right? As a company commander, regimental headquarters or whatever it was. And when he came back at night, he would dig his foxhole for the night, right? Or his fighting hole, as they called it. And he felt that his leadership was appreciated. The time that he came back from doing his officer duties and his men had dug the hole for him. And I thought about that and I thought about the lesson that a guy like that took. And it was just like, wow. He was, you know, then that, I guess that's probably the mark of a good soldier and a good leader, right? That your men would do that for you rather than make you suffer and watch you do it and snicker.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, no. Tremendous story. It is interesting, by the way, when I talked to Richard last year or earlier this year, whenever, I guess it was last year, whenever it was, about the story that you broke about the gift. He was talking about it in retrospect and how his dad sort of surprised him by saying, when they went to meet with the president of the University of Memphis, that Fred said, it seems like you need $100 million here. Anyway, Richard said, after the meeting, I didn't expect them to do that. He didn't expect you to do that, blah, blah, blah. And Fred said, well, we've got to do something, you know, to help the city. But then Fred went on to say, in what is now a sort of bittersweet foreshadowing, he said, oh, by the way, I'm 80 years old this year. That's your money and your siblings. And so there you go. And it turned out Fred has passed, and it's sort of stunning. It's stunning, I think, for the whole city, and it'll be interesting to see what the repercussions are as the days pass. All right, you, by the way, also you had a story yesterday that I was fascinated by, which is that the city has done some environmental testing of air quality, and this is in the wake of the furor over XAI. You wrote that story. What are the results? What are the circumstances of this? Give us a little background too.
Yeah, let's do a little background here first. So as we've discussed, you know, innumerable times on this program, XAI is running natural gas turbines at its Pigeon Industrial Park site in Southwest Memphis that partially power its supercomputer. Those turbines don't have an air emissions permit. There's been a lot of concern from environmental groups and from the NAACP about those turbines' effects on air quality. And so the city of Memphis, which does not have an environmental regulatory role, okay, the city of Memphis, they do not regulate the environment. They have maybe the statutory power to do it, but they don't do it. It's typically the Shelby County Health Department's job. Decided in the wake of all of these concerns, okay, to do some air monitoring testing. They had previously asked, you know, the University of Memphis to study the hypothetical of this. Like, what is this hypothetically going to do with these 15 turbines that XAI plans on making permanent or here? They previously had studied that, but now we're like, we're actually going to study the tests. We're actually going to test the air quality here. And so what the city of Memphis did is they picked three sites. I think one is a control site, well, not with City Hall. And then two other sites. One is the Links at Whitehaven, which, you know, the Gulf Paddock and me knows well, and is about a mile away from the two-lane road data center that XAI is currently building. And then there is Macedonia Baptist Church on Fields Road in Boxtown, which is, as the crow flies, less than 3 miles from XAI's Southwest Memphis supercomputer where these turbines are. And what they found is there were no real detectable levels that were, you know, dangerous to humans in these air quality tests. That's what they found. However, the Southern Environmental Law Center says, well, you're not testing for certain smog chemicals, including nitrogen oxide. The city did test for nitrogen dioxide. They're dioxide and oxide, and I'm not going to give everyone a chemistry lesson here. So, and then there is also some skepticism of exactly where on these buildings the city of Memphis put the, or their contractor, the city of Memphis didn't actually do this. They paid someone, NSAFE Incorporated, to do this, where they actually put the monitors. And essentially, you know, I was reading EPA guidelines on this last night, and you're not supposed to have them particularly sheltered from people, and sheltered in a way that airflow isn't going to find them. At the same time, you don't want to have them stay in a place, and this may be the problem with the city finding a little formaldehyde at City Hall, is you don't want them in a place where people are just going to start smoking cigarettes,
right?
Or leave a car running next to them, because that's going to have some of the exact same emissions and chemicals. And so what is interesting about this is the city of Memphis has released this data. It is certainly getting a lot of attention. Whether or not it shows, I mean, they only did this over 2 days, June 13th and June 16th, whether or not it closes the door and closes the, says case closed here, there's no air quality issues from XAI. I don't think we have enough information yet. But it is certainly a very interesting step that the city took. And it's another sort of political step from Memphis Mayor Paul Young, where he is further attaching himself to the support of this project rather than just, you know, essentially operating and saying, well, it's an economic private company, let them do what they do.
We got to run, but real quick, are they going to do more testing or is this a one-off?
They're most likely going to do more testing, yes.
Right. You can read the piece at the Daily Memphian. Thanks so much, Sam. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jeff. Bye-bye.
That's Sam Hardiman from the Daily Memphian. If you were thinking of selling your house, Josh Hysaw and the team at Keller Williams Realty, here's the thing. They're going to make sure you get a good deal. And if you're thinking of taking one of those instant cash offers that you get unsolicited all the time, don't do it. Call Josh and the team at Keller Williams because, let's be honest, he lives here. He's invested in this place. He's not just some, you know, guy making a random call. He's going to come out to your home. And unlike those offers, which will lowball you, he is going to make an offer for the full market value of your home. Same convenience. You don't have to fix up the home. You don't have to have showings, all of that. He'll buy the house as it is and give you 4 months to move, but isn't going to try to lowball you on the offer. If that's the way you want to go, just another reason to call Josh Hysaw and the team at Keller Williams Realty. You can check them out online at joshhasthebuyers.com. We got to take a break. Back in a moment. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
It is the summer of 1,000 engagements over at Robert Irwin Jewelers. It's hot out there, and here's the deal. You get in there, get your diamonds, get your ice, and you get a free Yeti Tundra cooler with your purchase. Now, that's not the reason to go buy a diamond ring at Robert Irwin Jewelers. The reason is, honestly, the prices. They're the lowest prices on GIA-certified natural diamonds in the Mid-South, and the meant-to-be guarantee. Buy your loose diamond custom engagement ring at Robert Irwin Jewelers. You have 365 days to return it and the financing and all of that. But in addition, you spend $24.99 or more, you get a free Yeti Tundra cooler. That's pretty cool, too. It is the Summer of 1,000 engagements. Save up to 40% during the Summer of 1,000 engagements. They've got five convenient locations, or go online and shop at rijewelers.com. Just reading Fran Fraschilla. He's a big believer in Neat Clifford. So who knows? What the hell do I know? Like, whatever. I'm willing to believe whatever. I'm an optimist, Jeffrey. I'm an optimist. Go Grizz. What's coming up next on 92.9?
Here's what's coming next. Jason and John.
Yeah, there you go. We got to get out of here. Back tomorrow. Work for now is done.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.